Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. First off, it's Memorial Day weekend, so we'd like to thank and honor all current and past military personnel. Thank you for your service. And when you encounter a veteran, we encourage you to say the same. In news this week, military recruiting is skyrocketing under President Trump. Here's the Mark Cox Show.
Remembering people who've sacrificed for this country, it's always a great moment, a great time to do that. Hopefully you have a chance to do that. But right now, speaking of the military and the people who sacrifice and give of their time, we have Master Sergeant Nick Connery on the line. He's with the Missouri Army National Guard. And Sergeant, thank you for your service.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Thank you. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
That's fantastic. It's great to have you on this morning. You know, earlier we had Lieutenant Colonel on, who is an F-15 pilot, and among other things, he was talking about sort of a change in attitude among military members and toward the military over the last couple of years. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen a lot more propensity to serve and to welcome us into the communities. Most recently, we actually hit our annual mission for the first time ever in this area during the 2025 recruiting year. And so we have been seeing a lot of positive movement in that direction.
Well, I think that's fantastic. Of course, because of the nature of what we do, we constantly hear stories of how some groups, maybe some school districts and others, would try to throw up roadblocks to you recruiting. Yeah. Have you experienced that? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, that is a consequence of COVID, you know. And so when you look at the numbers we're getting now, that's a reaction to those terrible numbers we got during COVID, where we couldn't go to schools, we couldn't have community events. People need to see the military and hear from the military in order to kind of get interested in it. And when we were stuck in our recruiting stations with our masks on and spraying all that hand sanitizer and whatnot, we couldn't get out in front of people. And some school districts in the area, they got really friendly with that idea of like, oh, look, we have an excuse not to invite the military into school now. And even after the COVID restrictions went away, we still had a hard time getting back into that pre-COVID mindset where military recruiters were going to schools, we were having assemblies, we were hosting events, we were teaching classes in order to try to find the next best and brightest, and that's at the college and secondary education level.
So with some of these districts still trying to say you cannot come in here and do these assemblies and talk with the students, how are you getting creative? What are you having to do to try to reach some of these people?
Well, we had to shift. We had to shift a little bit. And so, you know, we're not going to burn bridges with our educational partners. If that's their stance, that's their stance.
Right.
And so we focus more on, you know, junior colleges, labor unions, the workforce market right now that's out and about, and explaining to them how part-time reserve service in the Army National Guard fits their career and educational goals and can help them move forward in life.
Yeah, and you've got people from just about every background, don't you? I mean, who are still active members of the Guard. Maybe tell people, because everybody's got the idea it's, you know, 2 weeks out of the summer, and what is the full commitment when you commit to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, when you join the Army National Guard, we are a component of the Army. You are going to go to Army Basic Training, or AKA boot camp. You're going to learn an Army Military Occupational Specialty, MOS. And then you're going to come home. And when you come home, 28 days out of the month, you're going to go to school, you're going to work, you're going to be with your family. And then about 2 to 3 days in the month, you're going to do what we call your drill weekend. And that's just to stay up on your military tasks and skills. And then also we do a 2 to 3 week annual training every summer. And we're cramming a whole lot of Army mandatory training with ranges and all that good stuff, qualifications. We cram that in that 3 week period, two to 3 week period. And so that is the basic statutory commitment of the Army National Guard. There's always more if people want to do more. I tell people, like, the Army National Guard can be as much or as little Army as you want, depending on where you're at in life and what your other commitments are.
Sure. Sure, and that sense of service. I mean, I think that gets overlooked. For a lot of people, they want to do it out of a sense of service, to be part of something, but maybe not to necessarily have to know that they're going to go in and then be deployed somewhere.
Mark, you're trying to take my job right now. That's exactly right. That's what it is. It is, you know, they seen the National Guard on TV during the Joplin tornado, or they see us out there during the blizzards, and we're out there with the highway patrol rescuing stranded motorists from their vehicles. And they see what we do, and they think, you know, I would love to do that. I just don't think I can give up my job, my career, my family to do that. And then when they learn that it's a part-time commitment, and then we can get called up for those kind of missions, it kind of meets them halfway so that they can be a citizen, they can do all the good things they want to do in their community in civilian clothes, and then they can also, you know, help defend our nation at home and abroad in this uniform. And that's why we are the citizen soldiers.
Yes, sir. Master Sergeant Nick Connery, listen, thanks for your service with the Missouri Army National Guard, and a happy Memorial Day to you.
The big headline of the week revolved around President Donald Trump's ability to call shots, with Bill Cassidy in Louisiana and Thomas Massie in Kentucky proving what happens when you oppose the big man. Here's Bob Rose.
More details on the Trump touch, the golden touch. Let's see here. Trump endorsed Nevada U.S. Senate candidate Adam Laxalt, secured the Republican nomination in a landslide victory last night. He's the former Nevada Attorney General. He beat his competitor Sam Brown 56-33. Sheriff Joe Lombardo scored a relatively easy victory in Nevada's governor's race in the Republican primary. And so that's another one they classify it as a blowout. That's right. The trumpets are sounding.
The trumpets.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Voters in several states headed to the polls, primaries. I don't have all the final numbers on that. But rest assured that the percentages of Trump-backed candidates winning is huge. This is bizarre. You see the headline, rape victim ordered to pay child support to alleged attacker. Let me say that again. What? The rape victim is ordered to pay child support to alleged attacker.
Okay.
This was in Louisiana. A judge gave an accused rapist custody of the child that was conceived from the 2005 attack and eventually ordered his underage victim, underage at the time, to pay child support. Krista Abelseth said she was raped at 16 years old when a man nearly twice her age promised to give her a ride home from a local restaurant after a night out with friends. Instead, he brought me to his house, and he was 30 years old at the time. Once inside, he raped me on the living room couch. The teen became pregnant, had a daughter, who is now a teenager. Everyone assumed the pregnancy was from a boyfriend, and I let them believe that. She reportedly came, the guy, the rapist, came back into the picture 5 years later when he found out the child might be his. When my daughter was 5 years old, he found out. Once he found out, he pursued custody, wanted to take her away from me, explaining that a DNA test proved with near certainty, and that's how they say it, that he was the father. The judge granted him 50-50 custody.
Wow.
Despite the fact that the child was created via rape. Abelseth filed rape charges against Barn in 2015 after she found out it was within the statute of limitations in Louisiana. I thought if I didn't do it the next day, there's nothing I could do about it. I went from a I went to a trauma counselor. Now you have 30 years after you turn 18. That case is still open. It was never assigned to a detective. Nothing was ever investigated. Now the 32-year-old said she struggled to gain any traction with the justice system and reportedly lost custody over her daughter over allegations she gave her a cell phone. What?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's just awful.
Yeah.
Oh, dreaded cell phone.
Yeah. This is crazy.
Rapist is okay.
Yeah, she's been forced to pay her perpetrator, forced to pay her rapist child support and legal fees and give up custody of the child that's a product of rape. It makes no sense. So there are there is a legal group that is trying to work on her behalf. What a nightmare.
Oh,
this is where we're at. The justice system. They don't really listen, or they don't really pay attention. They don't take into account extenuating circumstances. In this case, I think would be a very major part of the case. They just look past it.
That's crazy.
Oh, well, the rape, you know, Ray, you say rape, whatever, get over it. I just, wow. So, yeah, forget about the victims. In fact, punish the victims even more. What does that sound like? That's like something that would happen to you in one of those fundamentalist, maybe Middle Eastern type countries.
But aren't these also the same
people? Oh, you were raped? It's your fault.
Yeah. Are these the same people, though, that say when it comes to, like, for instance, abortion, you're punishing someone if they've been raped by making them carry the child?
Right.
Back to the president's Midas touch. Republican Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie lost his reelection bid when he was defeated by a Trump-backed challenger in what became the most expensive U.S. House primary in American history. Massie drew Trump's ire by voting against his tax cuts bill last year, worried they would add to the nation's deficits. He also rejected Trump's military forays against Iran and Venezuela and routinely voted against U.S. foreign aid, including to Israel. Trump said of Massie's defeat, "He deserves to lose." Here's Annie Fry with more.
His moment in the sun, being all petted and coddled by the mainstream media and other Democrats, and probably will continue to. Folks, this is a guy who voted against the One Big Beautiful Bill, as did every other Democrat. This is a guy who voted against DHS funding. That's a disgrace for any member of Congress, let alone a Republican member of Congress. He can run around all day saying, "I'm the vote against government spending. I'm against the government." Yeah. He was just seeking his 15th and 16th year being employed by the federal government so that his family has nice health care and a great pension.
There you have Kellyanne Conway, former counselor to President Trump, talking about Thomas Massie and putting her thoughts to the matter. We're asking you for yours. Ethan, what do you got?
From the 636, the real issue with Thomas Massie wasn't his views. It was his lack of pragmatism when confronted with his inability to win others over his point of view. In politics, you must learn the art of the deal, how to compromise. Another one says, Massie once was good, then okay, now, all caps, good riddance. He became self-enamored. The texts are disconnected on the chat. Here he goes. It says he drifted left and he deservedly earned the label of Rhino. He is a typical office holder who is a great reason for term limits.
Yeah, I think maybe one of the reasons why it's so frustrating for so many people is because he started with a principle, almost a talking point, that eventually became just kind of a foundation that he built this other thing on. And then he just, like, he became an influencer. And I just don't have time for people who are in Congress representing people trying to use that as an opportunity and a platform to influence back to the people. And then you start kind of like congressman splaining to your district about this is how it's going to be. It just seemed like he got really butthurt about Donald Trump. Let's talk to Will Chamberlain about it, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project on X.
I had a great Tuesday.
Yeah.
Got to watch Thomas Massie lose. That made me very happy. And in general, it was a good day. I was actually up testifying at the Senate, so I had a fun day. A lot of interesting things happening.
A packed day for Will Chamberlain on Tuesday. Was Thomas Massie, did he start okay when he got into Congress and he's wearing the deck clock and stuff like that? To me, it seemed like the principle of the matter was good, but he kind of lost the principle.
Yeah, I mean, he came in with the Tea Party, and that was sort of the Tea Party thing, was excessive spending. And I think that you can actually trace, like, I think the Trump coming into power really put the Tea Party types who really came in hard on just all spending is bad. It put them in a real bind. And some, a lot of them have left Congress now. I mean, Chip Roy is another good example. He's not going to be in Congress much longer. But Massie changed. And it's not just the Tea Party stuff. Like, even 2-3 years ago, that was what he was focused on. But since his wife died, he's become a very strange and kind of petty person. And his conduct over the last 2 years has been, he's kind of been making a spectacle of disloyalty to Trump. He's the only person who didn't vote for the Big Beautiful Bill. He's worked with Ro Khanna on this Epstein stuff and made a complete fool of himself. Like, he went on the House floor to reveal names of people implicated in the files. And the four of them were just people who had been in a police lineup with Epstein. You know, totally unconnected otherwise. And in general, and he's just insulting and patronizing. And then, you know, the particularly you know, he makes a whole thing about being principled, the principled guy in the race, and he's the only guy with principle. And he's running an incredibly dishonest campaign where he's pretending that he and Trump are on good terms. The last thing his campaign did was send out a blast out of mass text with a 2022 era endorsement of Massey, without saying that in this current race he was not endorsed. So, you know, good riddance, honestly. I think he deserves to be in the private sector. And who knows, maybe I'll end up debating him on Piers Morgan in about 6 months.
yeah, if we're all so lucky. Well, Chamberlain speaking with us right now with the Article 3 Project. There's something about, you know, Donald Trump does demand loyalty. It's maybe his favorite thing. And that's not new. And he's non-discriminate about it. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be like in the club for him to be loyal. He'll take anybody. He was on the stage with Mark Cuban earlier this week because Mark Cuban, he could find a cross section in a Kamala Harris Venn diagram that made sense for the American people. I find that to be incredibly refreshing. People overlook that about Trump all the time. And it's always bizarre to me with people like Thomas Massey, with MTG. I mean, honestly, like Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, their voting record, like they did vote for what the Republicans wanted quite often. There was a lot in the center of that Venn diagram, but yet there's something about Donald Trump that breaks these people on the inside.
Yeah. I mean, who knows exactly what that is? And that's a good example of what happened with Massey. And, you know, and it gets to a point where they start making a spectacle out of their own disloyalty, and that's when they need to go.
We would be remiss if we didn't stop and pay attention to the tragic loss of Kyle Busch, a racing legend. Here's more on that from Mark Reardon.
No fun. I got to tell you, we're going to talk about a very, very sad story. NASCAR icon Kyle Busch, two-time Cup Series champion. He's won more races across the sport's three national series than any other driver in the sport's history. Has died at the age of 41. He went into the hospital earlier today. He had come down with an illness a couple of weeks ago, but it's rather mysterious at this time. Our good friend, NASCAR legend Kenny Wallace with us this afternoon. You're in Charlotte right now, right, Kenny?
I am. I am about 7 miles from the Charlotte Motor Speedway right now at my mom's house, and just trying to process this whole situation. You said it perfectly, you know. He was one of the best, and, you know, it's one thing if we could announce that he had an accident, but a sudden death like this has just got everybody calling everybody.
Some of the reporting includes this information that he had, you know, been sick a couple of weeks ago and he had already pulled out of the race for this weekend, and then reports earlier that he went into the hospital. But this happened really, really fast. Do you know anything more about his condition at this point or not?
Look, it's like this. I'm not going to lie to you, okay? Everybody around the community feels like they know what happened. And but all I'm going to say is this, because I don't want to get in trouble.
No, I get it. I get it. Completely. Yeah. I understand. Right.
Yeah. But all I can say is this. 2 weeks ago, now this is a crazy, unbelievable timeline. 2 weeks ago, the NASCAR Cup Series was in Watkins Glen, a road course up in New York. And the race was going on, and maybe 20 laps to go. Network TV picked it up, and it was shocking. He said, please have a doctor at my trailer when I get done racing. And everybody's like, whoa. And he was coughing very badly. And, you know, so here we are. We go like 5 more days. Now, a Friday, 6 days ago on a Friday, he looks great. And he wins his 69th NASCAR Craftsman truck race 6 days ago.
Jeez. Wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so he was coughing and calling for a doctor after the Watkins Glen race. So you assume, okay, he's fixed up. Maybe he's on steroids for his coughing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But his coughing was very bad. And then we think, well, he's fixed up because he just got done winning, you know, just a little bit later. So he won on Friday last week. So today is Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So he wins. And, you know, like I said, I do know more. But just you kind of put it all together. He's coughing. Mm. And so it's just an incredibly sad deal. And what makes it sadder is he's young. He's 41. He has a wife that's even younger. He's got two young children. And his son, Brexton, is like the next superstar. He's winning at everything at a childlike age. And this kid's been tutored by his father. and only to have his father pass away unexpectedly. So it's hit this community really hard because it's just not supposed to happen.
Kenny, can you talk a little bit about, I feel like Kyle Busch kind of matured visibly, you know, through his career. And the older he got, the more people liked him. Like, I was one that thought, you know what, maybe it was after he had Brexton. But what I feel like he went through a transformation and was coming out a better person. Is that just me?
Yeah, I think my version would be the same as yours. I would just put it a little differently. When he drove for Toyota, see Toyota, the people can't forget about Pearl Harbor, rightfully so. So Toyota gets roughed up in NASCAR because of Pearl Harbor, right? So and Kyle was very brash, and you know they didn't like him winning in a Toyota, so he was good, but he gave it back to the fans. They'd give it to him, and he'd give it back, and so every race he would win, he'd get out of the car and he'd do a bow, you know, and they're booing him. So the whole Toyota, Pearl Harbor, you know, that whole deal was lingering. Well, what changed it all is he left Joe Gibbs Racing and went to drive for Chevrolet, Richard Childress, the owner of the late, great Dale Sr.'s car. So when Kyle left Toyota and went to Chevrolet for Richard Childress, he became loved again. But both of our versions are correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, NASCAR issuing a statement, "We're saddened and heartbroken to share the news of the passing of Kyle Busch, a two-time champion and one of our sport's greatest and fiercest drivers. He was just 41 years old. We extend our deepest condolences to the Busch family, Richard Childress Racing, and the entire motorsports community." This one's going to hit people hard, I think, Kenny, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's hard on everybody because, like, right now, you know, everybody's in such belief that, you know, "I love you guys. So I said, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna talk to KMOX." But my phone is hundreds of messages and calls right now. My phone's dinging as I'm talking to you. But here's why. Because people want to know what happened. How did this happen?
Yeah.
So everybody's trying to find out what happened. What happened? And that's what's going on.
Yeah, because all they're saying is severe illness, as you said. I think there's people out there that know. But again, what you want to be careful of now in a situation like this, and maybe you can't do anything about it, is people are going to start conspiracy theories and stuff like that. So we'll have to see what the family says and what the official word is. But Kenny, I know that this has got to be rough on you. I'm glad and so happy you jumped on with us to share your thoughts. But not a great time to invite you to come on, and I apologize for that.
So sad for his family and friends and fans. Back to the military. Are we running out of weapons in Iran? Here's Tara Servatius.
Poor General Jack Keane. Now, you can tell he knows that Trump watches Fox News. Trump will sometimes criticize people on Fox News. You can tell him he's looking in the camera and he's begging Trump. He's begging him. Please. Please. And he's starting to put it very bluntly, the way I've put it for over a year now. You have to kill them. He said that yesterday. You have to kill them. He said it twice. Two different interviews. Looking right into the camera, he's talking to Trump. He's about to lose his mind. Folks, the more they violate the ceasefire, and they do it every other day now, hit all kinds of things. Our bases, we still haven't said what the casualties were on our base in Iraq. Have made that public, which means there's casualties. Still haven't addressed the fact that China armed Iran literally while we were sitting at the table with them. Trump and Xi were sitting there agreeing that China would not arm Iran. Literally as China was arming Iran, right outside the Strait of Hormuz, they left a floating armory. God knows what was on that thing. And the IRGC just stepped in and took it. You think the timing was an accident? No. It was Dimakis. And yet, days later, Trump was saying,
President Xi has promised me that he's not sending any weapons to Iran. That's a beautiful promise. I take him at his word. I appreciated it. We had an amazing time in China. You know, look, we got along very well before this, but President Xi and I had a really amazing time. I think he'd say the same thing, but he promised that he's not sending any weapons.
If I know they're sending weapons, I mean, he knows they're sending weapons, right? I mean, I know it. Half of YouTube knows it. They know what was in that weapons. Like, yeah, the ship was flagged to Honduras. It was Chinese. It was loaded with weapons. It was an armory. And the pickup was timed exactly during that phase of the negotiations. They were sitting at the table. I don't get it. I don't get it. And I keep thinking this is all a stalling tactic by Trump. And he said yesterday, look, I'm not in a hurry. Maybe he's not. Oil prices are dropping, so maybe he's got a little more breathing room. Maybe. But it terrified me yesterday. My heart skipped a beat when I see, hey, we're making progress. We think we're going to get him to agree to the 30-day. Please, please, no. Kill them. You cannot make a deal with them. They have bombed our destroyers. They have bombed our bases. They have hit nuke sites. They haven't stopped bombing our bases since the beginning of the war. They killed 7 of us on those bases with Chinese satellite targeting. You're like, what part of this? But then I keep thinking there's got to be an explanation. It can't be pure high-octane stupidity. He signs this deal, it's going to be his Afghanistan. Because let me tell you what, it's going to be mere months before Iran retaliates. And they're going to take a base. They're going to wipe it off the face of the earth. That's if we're lucky. Maybe a bigger strike. Folks, these are the same people that sent a long-range missile they said they did not have that traveled an additional over 1,200 miles at our base, joint base with the UK in Diego Garcia. That was just weeks ago. We're going to cut a deal. The cult that's ruling Iran right now, that is a genetic cult. People don't understand this. There's nothing like this in other Muslim countries, not Sunni or Shia. This is different. It's new. So they believe themselves to be fundamentally different, even genetically. This is why Amos Tabb is so inbred. He's like too dumb to run the place. Yeah, they brag that they're inbred because their line is pure, is the way they put it. You can't negotiate with that. You can't cut a deal with that. And here's the problem with the mentality of these mullahs. That's why Jack Keane is looking. He is General Keane, 4-star retired, looking into the screen. No, hold on with the music. I'm not done. Looking into the screen and he's going, kill them, kill them, kill them. It sounds crazy, but Jack Keane's not a crazy guy. I've been watching him for years. He's very measured. You have to kill them or they will kill us or our troops. Maybe they'll hit Paris. I don't know. Could be something, though. There is no deal that could be cut. And what's getting worse is more they hit us, the more they hit us and 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 humiliate us, the better deal we offer them. And you know what the problem with that is? They don't look at this like we do. You can't cut a deal with that. This is not a real estate transaction in Manhattan. When they see America capitulate to them, what do they see? That's a law. What has Allah told them? This goes for all Muslims. It doesn't matter what the infidel uses to fight. You might be the most, you know, next generation nukes. You only have sticks and stones. You're going to win. Why? Allah's on your side. What is the sign of that? The enemy lays down his arms and capitulates before you. When Trump does this, what do they think? It's Allah. Look at Allah. It's a miracle. Allah is saying, like, wow, no matter how many times we hit you, no matter how many of you we kill on your bases, wow, you just capitulate more. It can't be done. And folks, I want to say one more thing. Listen to this. A heated White House clash erupted as President Trump approved continued talks with Iran despite pressure from senior officials pushing for tougher action. At the second J.D. Vance, who's always been passionately anti-Iran war, got involved. It's VP J.D. Vance, Steve Witkoff, and Jared Kushner, who've been like, let him do whatever. We'll cut a deal. No more fighting. No more escorts through the strait. Leave the tankers where they are. J.D. Vance is so weak here from the Iranians' point of view, okay? I'm not in the talks, but this is what they believe. They specifically said they would not negotiate with Rubio. It could only be Vance. And things went south almost immediately the second we sent in Vance and Kushner. And I think that's who Trump's listening to. Meanwhile, Netanyahu is begging Trump, begging him. Look, if you don't want to kill them, you don't want to wipe out. Folks, we have a few hundred left to go. Tops. And I don't even think the bottom tier can run anything. I don't think they can run their way out of a paper bag. Israel is begging, please, if you don't want to do it, that's fine. Just let us do it. Let us finish it. You leave them in place, total loss. It'll be Trump's Afghanistan. I hope that's not what's happening here. The good news, Trump's history is he always course corrects. He does something crazy. He gets off course, but he figures it out, usually by the rebellion on our line, online, which, by the way, our side right now is in pretty much open rebellion over this Iran crap. And he'll course correct. He better do it soon.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.